Welcome to the ANews podcast. This is episode 132. This podcast covers anarchist activity, ideas, and conversations from the previous week on Anarchist News. It's designed to be useful to anarchists and the anarcho-curious. Give us feedback and constructive criticism by email at podcast@anarchistnews.org. For more information and usually some good commentary, go to the non-sectarian anarchistnews.org. Editorial on audiences, asshole series number 4. I have a very brave friend. He puts himself out into the world with all kinds of projects that require skills that he doesn't have and unpopular opinions. Some of these are well thought out, some are underexplained, and some are both. He is the opposite of an audience member or a spectator. His attitude when he finds someone or something interesting is to incorporate it, to engage it, to negotiate it with it. Egoists call this owning something, I believe. Responding to this provocation has made me try things that I would not have tried on my own. Some of the things I have tried have been utter failures, some have been mixed failures slash successes, and one includes the project you're listening to now, so you can judge for yourself. All of these attempts have questioned my assumptions of my own limitations, which are very different from my actual limitations. My fear of failure is a lot worse than just failing. In fact, failing, like history, involves a freeze, or reification if that's the way you swing, that doesn't actually exist. Some very famous asshole politician was known to not accept failure because failure just meant no longer working on the problem. As long as you're still working on how to solve a problem, you haven't failed. Previous attempts are learning experiences, pointing to directions you know not to go in the next time. Nowadays, it's not hard to find that kind of sentiment on a motivational wallpaper image, but the word anarchy is popular these days too, and it doesn't make anarchy wrong either. It just means that most people don't actually understand it for the scary fucking thing it is. And the concepts are scary for similar reasons, I think, which is that they are both about agency. Not being able to change the world in the way that we want doesn't mean that we can't change our lives to be more what we want, and that responsibility is a drag, probably even more than it's empowering. It means making hard choices, and sometimes those will be the wrong choices, but they're only failures if they freeze us. I have a very brave friend. Or maybe I have a friend whose insecurities complement mine, with an E. Maybe that's the same thing. I'm lucky that I have some brave examples. Who are your examples of bravery? What do they encourage you to do? What fears are holding you back?
I try to be nice. I try to live my life, but everyone else is an asshole. I try to forgive. I try to live and let live, but everyone else is an asshole. And everybody else thinks of no one but themselves. And no one wants to help, cause they're all assholes. And every friendly chat is a knife in the back.
What's new this week? Against the Technosciences by anarchist and prisoner Dinos Giatsoglu. From Act for Freedom Now. A 3-day event happened in Italy called A Meeting Against the Technosciences. There were workshops on, for example, the relationship between tech exploitation and racism, non-neutrality of tech, the dangers of postmodernism, rethinking nature in the era of the artificial, how current tech transforms social relations, tech-related procreation, etc. This statement to the meeting by Greek prisoner Giatsoglu also mentions his own situation, if only briefly, his distinction between technology and quote-unquote complex or high technology, self-criticism, and what he sees as the lack of appropriate critique of high technology, perhaps especially in Greece. Prisoners who are able to stay involved and informed of events from inside are always inspiring. Write an anarchist prisoner today! Quote, this technology takes on the role of the savior of humankind. Who cares if for all human suffering, environmental pollution, ecological crisis, the capitalist, technological, and industrial society is to blame? After all, history teaches us over time that more technology does not come with a happier or more free world, unquote. I wish I knew more clearly what tech sciences means.
Submissions, Anarchist and Punk Festival in Sao Paulo, Brazil. From Festival of Anarchist and Punk Film of Sao Paulo. Wow, this is their 8th year. There's a link to submit your entry and some deadlines. Has anyone been to this festival before? We'd be interested in what previous years were like, not to mention this upcoming one, of course.
Armed attack against police by antagonistic cells of the new urban guerrilla in Chile. From Anarchist Worldwide. A communique that is far more subtle and also obtuse than any I've read before, and no, subtle and obtuse are not the same thing. Quote, observing and analyzing with caution allows for actions to be carried out at the time and choosing of those who plan them. Leaving aside the idea of arbitrary hierarchy and the impact of autonomous subversive violence according to their technical requirements. Of course, there are differences in actions, for example, between an explosive device and a simulated one. However, both can generate huge impacts if you're looking for more effect than the material destruction, varying material objectives, and media coverage. The same situation occurs when comparing street violence and an attack designed to disrupt daily normality. It is the previous analysis, the clarity of the effects, that leads to success, either by looking for chaos, the dissemination of something in particular, or looking for some exposure of the enemy, etc. Participating in street violence has the consequence of becoming submerged and becoming aware of its movement, revealing situations that are not evident in other instances. In the same way, doors are opened for the development and feedback with affinities and unknowns that are not part of a precise nucleus, thus strengthening us in many different ways. These ideas are the fruit of internal reflection as a factor of the experience that each individual brings to this collective instance. Our objective is to spread them, as well as to put them into practice with combative actions, keeping in mind that this is a perspective in an enormous universe of groups and individuals that constantly violate the social order with positions similar to or distant from ours. Unquote. Really, you should read this for yourself. This is a post that I think cries out for some commenters who ponder strategy. There's also a video. I did not watch it, though. Makes me want to read more from Chile for sure.
The wrong ice is melting, the wrong Amazon is burning, from CrimeThink, who should have an internal award for this title, even if it's just a double entendre. Anyway, this is another piece for people who haven't realized yet that they're anarchists, or at least anarchist-friendly. Propaganda for dissatisfaction with the eco-actions of mainstream groups. Topical, right? Quote, the most effective way to pressure politicians and executives to address the climate crisis is to show that whatever they fail to do, we will do ourselves. This means moving beyond symbolic displays of nonviolence to build the capacity to shut down the fossil fuel economy ourselves. No amount of media attention or progressive rhetoric can substitute for this. If we fail to build this capacity, we can be sure that the timeline for the transition to less destructive technologies will be set by those who profit on the fossil fuel economy, unquote.
A call for radical interventions in the global climate strike from It's Going Down. The announcement to hand out the thing that CrimeThink wrote described above. Cool, huh? Quote, we believe that anti-authoritarian radicals in the so-called United States should participate in the strike. This is an opportunity to bring an anti-capitalist perspective to thousands of people seeking system change. Unquote. Yeah, we want anti-capitalist system change, just like all the commies.
A Critique of Desert from the Wild Will Project by John Jacoby. I'm not saying that there couldn't be a good critique of Desert, only that this isn't it. Full of empty assertions, there was so a global anti-capitalist movement because I said so, and ahistorical references, 8,000 people today is extremely different from 8,000 people during the Russian Revolution, and anti-nihilist. The positives the author still finds in Desert, for me, far outweigh the strength of his criticism of it. Quote, my main disagreement with Desert, by denying the potential for a large-scale seizure of territory and ignores the role cosmopolitan organizations play in preserving that territory, he outlines a vision of a rather fragmented movement. His suggestions for city anarchists seem to stop at getting into existing social movements or living combative lives secretively, individually, and in the margins. But the city presents stronger opportunities than this. If in fact we will see a series of revolutions, a trend toward political balkanization, and an expansion of non-industrial territory, then the anti-industrialists of the city are in a unique position to add a level of coordination and cohesiveness to these movements, and they will have to do it organizationally. Unquote. It's true because Jacoby says so.
War Wounds, from It's Going Down. This is non-anarchist content from anarchist prisoner Noah Coffin, incarcerated for arson of a lumberyard in Orange Park, Florida. Here he reflects on the relationship of war to houseless folks and the hard life of a fellow inmate, which would certainly be one of the various brutal things about being in prison.
My Abduction by State Security Police on August 26, 2018. From Anarchists Worldwide via Athens Indie Media. A first-person account of one experience of the state actions against anarchists and exarchia, paraded in front of notoriously drug-conflicted exarchia as a potential drug dealer. Quote, from this leap that the state made, the threat of planting drugs and weapons on fighters and squats to the next step, the materialization of this threat, the distance is minuscule. Within the evolving conflict in exarchia and the squats front, this event disappears. It is registered as just yet another legally arbitrary and politically targeted investigation in a comrade's home. It is crucial not to lose the significance of this particular event. What is unfolding is a political method of penal, militaristic, and even paramilitary annihilation, familiar from parts of the planet and from recent history where counterinsurgent terrorism has become totally bold. Unquote. Before 9/11, some old-timers will remember that in the U.S., drugs were the growing boogeyman for the state to justify multiple prongs of repression. This piece makes the argument that the Greek state is at least sometimes using that same tactic, though in a wildly different social context, of course. Beware of all state rationalizations, people.
Anarchists' unlikely tool for fighting climate change, farming. From the Daily Beast, which uses an image that includes the Earth as a Molotov. I'm stuck between saying the Molotov is ours, you fucking liberals, and pondering the Earth as something that will explode. Confusing symbolism, no? Maybe that's just me. Iconography aside, this is a piece about Soul of Soulcast, his move from Occupy Denver to permaculture farmer by way of the Sandbook. Quote, "In this metaphor of the desert, where does life emerge?" Holland wondered. "If we end up unable to create some mass movement to overthrow the government, what does it look like to build a material force capable of sustaining itself, capable of struggle, capable of being the grounds that make government obsolete?" In Brunswick, Holland is beginning the search for answers. These days, Holland commits much of his time to gardening, but doesn't see it as a step away from his anarchist politics. Rather, he sees it as a step forward, unquote. This piece is pretty short, which is about the correct length to make Soul sound interesting, unfortunately.
Call for new volunteers for the relaunching of Anare's Info Shop. Quote, "Greetings, Portland anarchists. Anari's Info Shop is holding an open meeting for people interested in joining the collective. This meeting will be held at the Social Justice Action Center on Saturday, the 14th of September, 2019, from 5 to 7 p.m. The focus will be on developing the Division of Labor and Code of Conduct. If you know you want to join, please email us a brief letter describing who you are, your name, political alignments, or whatever else you feel is relevant to share. Why you want to be part of the collective, what you would like to accomplish as part of the collective," unquote. Might this be enough to make Portland interesting again? To provide a space for conversations less mired in state definitions and workerist assumptions? Non-Portlanders will just have to wait and see.
Amsterdam Anarchist Book Fair will be happening in November. More details TBA.
Release under judicial supervision for Embers and Others from Manon. The two people still detained among the three arrested near the Gare du Nord on May 1st in Paris were released September 2nd. The conditions are they are forbidden to appear in Paris, to leave the territory of the French state, or to see the other two. No other details yet.
Anti-Japan. This is an essay about a group in Japan called the East Asia Anti-Japan Armed Front, which published an influential urban guerrilla manual called Harahara Tokai. I'm sure I'm pronouncing that wrong. And was anarchist in tendency and included at least one anarchist member. Quote, "Though its members don't seem to have referred to the front as an anarchist project, though at least one member was, this ideological vagueness is part of what makes them interesting. With no formal leaders and no ideological program beyond the negative project of destroying Japan, they can be located squarely within the tradition of anarchist and non-sect activity, that is, activity unaffiliated with any Marxist party, in Japan during the 60s and 70s. And while there were certainly minor differences between these categories of groups and individuals, those details fall outside of the scope of this pamphlet. Part of my interest in sharing the history of the front is to relate the story of people who positioned themselves outside of the parties and red cults, as well as their accompanying hierarchies and strictures, which often define this time period in popular imagination. Whether you're interested in modern Japanese radical history, political violence, or lesser-known anarchist histories, there is much of this and more to find in the story of the front," unquote. If you're interested in any of those things, this is definitely worth reading.
Dorset Radical Book Fair, Anarchy in the Sticks, from Anarchist Federation UK. Workshops on strengthening global links, on international anarchism, reporting on lessons learned and shared during this summer's International of Anarchist Federations Congress, and ways to expand upon global strategies of cooperation. A climate crisis panel on environmentalist strategy and tactics, the obscure details of land ownership in the UK, egalitarian approaches to news distribution, wildcat strikes in the Royal Mail, Chav solidarity, putting radicalism back into the LGBTQ+ movement, surviving prison, and the romantic writer's relationship with the natural world. In the pictures, everyone looks like Ramsey. Not my cup of tea.
Great Anarchists, from Dog Section Press by Ruth Kinna. I've never read anything substantial by Kinna, but this piece reinforces what I've heard of her books, that she may be an academic, but she doesn't have many of the weaknesses common to your average classroom denizen. She doesn't talk only in jargon, she is respectful of non-academics, and she is thoughtful about the breadth and depth of anarchist thinking. Quote, "Who counts as a great anarchist can never be firmly established. One of the strengths of anarchist politics is that it has no before or after science. It's possible to identify foundational events, but the interchange and exchange of anarchist and anarchistic theory and practice has no special pivot or anchor." As well as Louise Michel, Lucy Parsons included Florence Nightingale in the famous Women of History series she published in The Liberator. Parsons didn't suggest that Nightingale was an anarchist, but she spotted a relationship between she and Michel. Nightingale had given up her class privilege and risked her life to help that most stupid victim of our present system, the soldier. This was virtuous behavior, and it also hinted at an approach to the solidarity and practical movement building that Parsons was keen to explore. The work of past anarchists won't give anyone answers, but it provides a rich store of ideas that has molded a plural political tradition. There is no standard conception of democracy, violence, war, class, or contractual obligation. While this makes anarchism complicated, it also makes it empowering, unquote. QED. This is one of the longest comment threads this week, which is odd, but it's mostly people trying to be funny, and that's hard.
Audio and video, final straw, an hour. Episode starts off with Sean Swain's efforts to have his claims of torture recognized by the Organization of American States. Next, an extended interview with Grace, the sole member of Jeremy Hammond's support team. If you were hoping for an opportunity to hear about the fuckery of prisons, communications management units, and holding someone beyond their release date, then you'll certainly be in luck. The episode finishes with a presentation on reclaiming Nietzsche from the right by a, quote, vegan, political activist, and supporter of the workers' solidarity movement from the Republic of Ireland, unquote. God. I didn't listen to that part. It seems a little weird, but I understand needing content on a weekly basis.
Important updates and talk at Please Try This at Home from Emotional Anarchism, 32 minutes. Please Try This at Home calls itself a, quote, collaborative conference about the intersections of radical bodily autonomy and biotechnology in Pittsburgh. It happened September 14th and 15th. People from Emotional Anarchy went to this conference, which they call a, quote, queer anarchist biohacking conference, for what that's worth. This 32-minute audio is the presentation that two folks from Emotional Anarchy did at the conference on personal, interpersonal, and biochemical approaches to mental and emotional well-being in radical politics, aka self-care, but not as an individual practice, but recognizing individual agency. They call it interdependence healing, recognize that it's not a new thing, and basically sound like they're taking a page from the Joyful Militancy book, or perhaps a whole chapter. They promote something called Anarchist Feels Circles, which are consciousness-raising groups by a different name, of course. But we're pro that, so that's cool. Volume on this recording is very different for one speaker than the other. I personally found the quieter one more interesting. YMMV.
The Ex-Worker number 65, Greek Anarchists Fight Back in Exarchia, 99 minutes. If you've been paying attention to the events in Greece over the summer and or Crime Think, you'll recognize most of the content read in this episode. The non-reading portions are two interviews, one with a Lailis Karagiani 37 squatter in Exarchia, and another with a member of Void Network. I definitely don't want to downplay the importance and shittiness of what's happening in Greece, but I do wonder what effect the oversaturation of Exarchia info has on the anarchist imagination.
Anarchy Bang, introducing episode 37, Criticism / Self-Criticism. 2 hours. Quote, this week we are going to talk about a hypothetical topic of criticism and how it lives in the world as a political phenomenon. On the one hand, we have the ideal way in which we should learn from our mistakes, and on the other, we have a toxic political phenomenon that descends from Maoism. How do we navigate the facts and need of intelligent, sensitive criticism in our work, while also recognizing that many of the same people who are those we need to do criticism with are also the people who are likely to hurt, harm, or destroy us? Also, and parallel to this discussion, we are coming up on a year of Anarchy Bang. What have we done well? What could and should we do better? Should we do this for another year? Should we add a camera and move the show to YouTube? Email us with your constructive criticism at team@anarchybang.com, unquote.
Alien Love Disaster Virus by Abby Mae Otis from We Will Remember Freedom. An Hour and 9 Minutes, read by B. Flowers. Another episode of fiction, this time from a collection of short stories, quote, taking apart the supposed equality that is clearly just not there, putting humans under an alien microscope, putting humans under government control, putting kids from the moon into a small beach town, and then putting the rest of the town under the microscope as they react in ways we hope they would, and then, of course, in ways we'd hope they don't, unquote. This story, as mentioned in its intro, doesn't feature anarchists or anarchists' struggle, which really seems like a strength as it focuses and succeeds on beautiful writing rather than sacrificing style for an obvious political message.
Topic of the week. Labels adopted, assumed, invoked, avoided. What are labels that you find useful for yourself? Here on A News, there's a lot of talk about the normal labels and how limited and limiting they are. But obviously, those labels and the people who use them, or at least use them easily, are compelling because there is something about them that continues to work. What are times in your life when you've used a label, either one given by other people or one you claimed for yourself in a way that worked for you? When did it stop working? How did you notice that it had stopped working? Here's an example, though not a perfect one. I used to know someone who was paraplegic and really smart. She would get around rules all the time because A, the rules weren't made for people like her. People mostly assume full use of limbs when making rules for customers, citizens, etc. And B, people felt bad for her. Also, people probably underestimated her intelligence as she spoke slowly. She did this entirely consciously and with some amount of glee, as seemed quite appropriate to me. In what might or might not have been connected, though obviously I'm connecting it now, she was invasive with me and wouldn't take no for an answer. So let's say, for the sake of argument, that that characteristic in her was part of her assessment that she could ignore / get around rules by playing the Crip card, as she put it. I'm really interested in labels that people adopt for themselves, semi-regardless of whether other people recognize those labels or not. Like, one of my labels is that I'm a bitch. That is something I've been called, usually not in so many words, but whatever. And that I have accepted, at least some of the time. And accepting it means that I'm outside of some social expectations. And also don't get to have some relationships that might be fun or anyway. Sorry, fun or interesting. Anyway, like that, now it's your turn. Which I guess would be your turn, Aragorn.
Well, you know, I think for me, labels have always been not the point, but like the also and. In other words, like, to get in the room, you need to be able to accept the labels.
Yeah.
But to do anything in the room, that's up to you. That's up to you being intelligent or bright or able or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I do find frustrating is how, for so many people, the label tends to like really fuck them up. Like, like getting over the label, accepting the label. Like, many, many people in my life and who have sort of passed through our circles have just, yeah, they've stumbled on the label. And so I guess for me, this is a topic about, like, why is it that the label, calling yourself something, being associated with something that you may or may not love all the time, why is that so hard or so challenging for people? And, you know, of course, if you're handicapped, the label and the truth of the matter are sort of in parallel. And really what you're dealing with are the misunderstandings around the label. Whereas, obviously, for me in my life, whether the label is anarchist or straight edge, you know, by and large, like, the label is such a big open field that I'm not so, like, I feel like if you don't accept it and move on, you basically have stunted your growth.
Okay. Sure. I mean, definitely as I have gotten older, I have been more willing to accept other people's labels of me, which, let's be clear, very often that's just name calling.
Yeah.
Mostly because I'm at a point in my life now where I am less interested in other people's definitions of me. So,
well, this is also about the fact that, like, you don't necessarily need that new person to be your friend.
Yeah, or even if they're not new, right, as it frequently turns out. No, I don't necessarily need them to be my friend. And I guess what it is like, I don't necessarily need to convince you that I am not this thing that you think that I am. Especially when that thing is, it's not just a label, it's an indictment. And with it, you, like that's your last volley before you walk away. Mm. Which meant you were never actually interested in who I am, just who you assessed me to be, or the label that you wanted to apply. And usually that involves your own shit and some self-righteousness. And I just I don't care. I don't have time for that. Well, it doesn't matter to me so much.
I would say, though, that the label question is important. Especially it's important because it does seem like a lot fewer people want to call themselves, for instance, an anarchist. And the reason that they don't want to do that is because they don't want to spend that time, you know, parsing through misrepresentation, or sure, or they think that the label isn't necessarily helping the political ideology or whatever. And I guess this is where there is something important to talk about, which is the idea that, like, to label yourself an anarchist, to be an out anarchist, is to make a choice about how you're going to live your life. And I think that right now we're living in a time where being a political operative, or, like, you know, doing something in the world, that is seen as being attractive to people, whereas doing something in the world that might be very specific, that you might be indicted for, you might be misrepresented for, sure, that's less interesting and for a lot of people. Whereas I think in the past, it was important for people to be like, I'm an active anarchist agent person, mm-hmm, and that word is important.
Right.
And so I think some of this conversation is a conversation about the fact that people want to do, you know, they want to defeat Trump. They want to chase off Nazis. That's who they want to be seen as, rather than seen as losers politically, which, of course, is what being an anarchist is.
I suppose that's true. No. Let me rephrase that. I do agree with you. I'm also thinking about the fact that social media frequently means that we are given labels that we don't have any control over and may or may not have any grain of truth to them whatsoever. But when they're uttered out loud on social media, it gives them a weight and meaning.
What's an example? White?
I don't know. I mean...
Well, what are you responding to?
I am thinking about the phenomenon. I'm watching a television show in which a high school girl is on social media by other high school people called a slut. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not that it would have been any different before social media. Yeah. And so now this is the truth of her and the world, and nothing that she says about that is going to change that.
Right. Correct.
And frequently the equivalent is, you know, you did this thing. And once that has been uttered, it is now truth. And the fact that you didn't do this thing is basically irrelevant. And that changes this, I feel. Or I think it's an important element of it, an important element of labels. So I don't particularly engage in social media. I don't particularly pay attention to what people say. I hear that people say things about me sometimes, but those things don't change my, like, what my labels are, what I identify as, the ones that I have given myself, the ones I too, less now, but at a different time in my life, was known as generally someone who was a bitch, and I was okay with that. And so I feel like I own these things. Mm. But I could see that not feeling true for everyone.
I mean, of course, I guess one of the ways in which we could talk about labels, which I feel like is an age-dependent way, is to talk about how we are the victims of labels. Other people are calling us names and we don't like it very much.
Yeah, I don't think I would suck. I don't think I would put it that way, but I see why you're going there.
Yeah. I guess I'm still a little unclear as to what your point is.
Well, perhaps I am as well. So, but I mean, commenting on what you said, your opening, I am generally, when it comes down to it, less interested in the actual label and more interested in the substance or action behind the label in any given individual. That's, or perhaps, you know, the label is a starting point and,
yeah,
and then what? And now what?
That's absolutely what I feel. Like, in other words, how does one deal with the fact that social reality is not of your construction?
Right.
How do you deal with that truth?
Sure.
It's true.
Right.
Social reality is not of your construction.
It's true. And there are definitely, you know, there are sifting and sorting ways that labels can kind of be useful. But yeah, they're not the beginning and the end all no. of everything. So
I appreciate people who have a real sense of humor about
for sure
about what they've been called or whatever in the fuck. Like, people who are who take it too seriously and who are deeply impacted by it tend to be people who I feel sorry for.
Yes, but there's a whole other sense of self thing involved in that, which is, yes, I also tend to feel sorry for people who, yeah.
I mean, I would say, you know, that this person who is talked about as an example, this paraplegic, they're doing it totally right.
Yeah, sure.
They're playing it for all it's worth. Absolutely. They're getting the kind of reward that you get in the world that we live in. And, you know, they're pushing their fucking wheelchair through the crowd. Like, that's, to me, that's perfect. Sure. That's great. And you know, it's similar to conversations around shoplifting, right? You know, the best shoplifters I know are the ones who absolutely use to the gills what the perception of what their label is.
Right.
Are.
Yeah.
And so it's like, yes, it's unfair. Like, a lot of things in the world that we live in are totally unfair.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, the white dude who I know who just wanders through fucking stores as a schlubby white dude and shoplifts the fucking hell out of these places. I mean, that's the way to do it.
Yeah, you got to use what you got.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I have less opportunity to do it now, but when I was younger in my 20s, would exploit rooms of guilty white people to get what I wanted out of them.
Right,
because of who I am, and felt no qualms about doing so.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting to have that conversation and to think about all the crowds of people we've known in our life. The people who, from my perspective, have gotten the most sort of interesting things out of that kind of play have not been the people who've run entirely in POC packs. In other words, yes. If you just run in a POC pack, no one feels guilty at some point.
Right. No.
And at some point, you actually have to be a human being, which for many of the people that we've met over the years has not been a great, an easy task. Whereas for many of those same people, when they're in rooms that are less POC, they tend to, their humanity comes out in more interesting ways.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. And on some level, that's what, if you want to, you can put it in those terms that, like, you are trading a part of yourself, a part of your humanity, yes, for whatever it is that you are trying to get. But I was always okay with that. So,
right. Well, and I mean, I think people, it's not appropriate to admit that you do things in your personal life that you might not find politically appropriate, but that actually makes surviving more plausible.
I think that's true, but I'm actually gonna one-up you a little bit. I think that people in general, live in a world where they believe that we don't manipulate one another.
Yeah.
And that that's not appropriate.
Yeah, that's fair.
And of course, that's just not true.
Yeah, it's just not true. Man, unless you never want to get laid.
Good God. And so, you know, then to actually voice out loud, I have absolutely manipulated situations and done it explicitly for my own personal benefit. Not for some greater good, not from some great political ideal, not, you know, people don't. That probably makes me a horrible human being, but I accepted a long time ago that I was a horrible human being. And it's one of my labels and have been okay with that for, you know, a couple decades now. So that's okay.
Well, thank you very much for having this conversation.
Thank you.
This podcast is the effort of many people. This week, the podcast was sound edited by Brig. What's New was written by Jackie and Brig, and read by Chisel and Brig. No editorial this week, or an editorial to be determined. Let's just leave that out. We thank Aragorn and Ariel for their help with the topic of the week, an egoist take on labels. Contact us at podcast@anarchistnews.org. And to learn more, anarchist and anti-political books, pamphlets, and other material are available at littleblackheart.com for news by and or about anarchists. And up to the minute commentary, I see you at anarchistnews.org and or the Anarchist News IRC chat room linked on eNews.
Side effects may include death.